The big question, and this changes for everyone, is why do you buy a wine? And do you know where that wine actually comes from?
As I like to say, there's life after Cabernet Sauvignon.
The most expensive wine in the world is a Bloody Merlot. Why can't we be in that group? We can be.
It is important to adapt your rootstock to the location where you are and what you want to grow.
There's a moment in a red wine fermentation where it gets really foamy, froths up in your face, and it smells amazing. I think that's my favorite part.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 304. This week we feature Jeff and Kathy Lemon of Lemon Creek Winery in Berrien Springs, Michigan. Many family farms can be discovered in the wine business, but few have been around as long as Lemon Creek Winery. Jeff and Kathy Lemon have seen some great change in Michigan's wine industry, and pretty much everything has been for the better. Growing grapes and making wine demands much of a property owner, but passion is what drives what goes in the bottle. We met with Jeff and Kathy back in November during our Michigan wine tour. The warm and friendly feel of the tasting room brings guests from all over the state, including Chicago, and us too. And continuing with our tour of Michigan wineries, we are here at Lemon Creek Winery, and we're visiting with Jeff and Kathy Lemon, and we're in Berrien Springs, and this is the southwestern part of Michigan. How are you both doing today?
Great.
Really well.
So we're just post-harvest here, and you're still, you were saying you had some grapes that you were working with. Where are you at this
Well, point? Yeah, we're post-harvest would be a pretty good way to say it, but we do still have a few grapes hanging out there. We have a few of the grapes hanging for ice wine. I'm not sure this is really going to be an ice wine kind of year. We're not real optimistic about it, and it's a small amount. And I actually do have some other grapes that were hanging for some late harvest. But for the most part, yesterday was our last big day of harvest.
It's funny when you think about harvest, you do tend to think about a little more pleasant weather. So you're dipping into some cooler weather here. Does that cause you any kind of trouble?
Well, yeah, the whole month of October was less than ideal. A lot of cool weather. We've been below normal temperatures, I think, the entire month, both day and night. That has extended our season out. I didn't think it was going to bleed into November quite this far, but it has.
But everything is picked.
Everything is picked, and we're, for the most part, we are very happy.
Good. Well, that's a good thing to hear. Well, let's go back to a bit of history. How long have the two of you been here? Obviously, you're a married couple, and this is your business. When did you start the winery here?
Well, the winery started in 1984, and culmination of efforts by my parents, my brother, Tim, and Kathy and I. We started off in 84, and in 1985, my parents, the next year, said, well, we're not going to spend our retirement money starting a winery, so you boys are on your own. So, and it also did include my other brother, Bob. So there's the three brothers are partners in the winery. My brother Tim and I are partners in the farm, which a separate entity, but also just considered as one in a lot of ways, the Lemon Creek Fruit Farm, which has been has been here in the family on this site for since 1855.
Wow.
This is our 163rd year of keeping the farm rolling. So
you look incredibly young for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. She wishes you'd have said that to her.
Yeah, well, you just happened to have the microphone at the time. But I mean, even the period of time, was it
34 yeah. years, yep.
That's a pretty good length of time for any winery anywhere.
He's been the winemaker since day one.
Really?
So he's a 34-year...
veteran of making wine, and it's amazing I learn more every year than the previous.
That's fascinating. Wow. Haven't learned your lesson, though. Just keep on doing it, right?
I know. I'm addicted to it, actually.
One year, you're going to get it right. Is that how that works? Well, maybe it is. It's not a typical job. It's not something that you just up and do one day. What made you decide to do this, other than the fact your parents started? Was this just something you wanted to jump into?
Well, actually, it wasn't our parents so much that started it. We kind of pulled them along with us because...
They had money.
They had some money, and we didn't have any money. Yeah. So that was a big part of it.
We were young and capable and everything, but we needed a little financial help back in the day. So,
sure.
You know, our reasons for getting into it were in the fact that they're, from the farming point of view, we were growing wine grapes for other wineries, and there happened to reach a moment where there was just an overabundance of certain varieties, basically one variety of grapes, and that's what we were growing a lot of, as our neighbors did plant it also. And so whereas the market was very, very good and there was a lot of demand, it went to no demand and just basically excess grapes. Our thinking at the time was that we would start a winery to utilize some of those grapes. And at the same time, we had really just begun our farm market and U-pick operation through the farm, because we also grow apples, peaches, cherries, raspberries. And we thought that would be a pretty good draw, because we wouldn't just be a peach stand on the road. We would be a peach stand with a winery, a tasting room.
Yeah,
so,
And those two things worked, especially in the beginning, worked really well. They still do, because people will come here to pick fruit, and then they'll walk over to the winery and try the wine, and they're totally surprised that, you know, we have the quality that we do. Or the reverse, they will come here for the wine, and then they'll walk out there, and they live in Chicago. 85% of our customers are from Chicago. And those peaches were just picked today, and they've never tasted anything like it.
So, bad.
So it does, it's a good combination of businesses to have,
And the impact of starting the winery wasn't exactly what I anticipated anyhow, because as it really turned out, the farm market fed the winery as opposed to the winery feeding the farm market
in the beginning.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, so it was basically customers, people were here to get fruit and pick fruit, and they'd say, well, would you be, because we actually ran both of the operations out of the same building here, the main tasting room, and we said, when they got done, would you like to try some wine? And, you know,
their first thought is, you mean like rhubarb wine? What are you talking about?
Ouch.
Well, yes. Or Concord, for
and
sure.
And they're surprised. Yeah.
And whereas, actually, we've never made a Concord wine or American grape variety wine. Yeah. So
it's all French hybrids and French vinifera.
And vinifera.
Well, one question I wanted to go to when you're talking about the farm, how many acres are you farming overall, and then how many acres are you farming for grapes?
You know that.
Well, we have about a 300-acre farm, and about 200 of that is in production, with 170 of it being wine grapes, and the other 30 a combination of cherries, peaches, apples, probably a little more.
Pears, plums.
Yeah, it's probably more like 40-plus, but
So do you sell your wine grapes or your excess, or do you have that as your first market, whatever it might be?
No, we do sell. We sell a fair amount of our, because we have quite a bit of production, and we're basically about a 9,000 case winery, between 8 and 10.
That's a good size for small.
Usually lands at about 9.
Yeah.
And we with our production, we do sell, supply a lot of not just local Michigan wineries, but out-of-state wineries as well.
Oh, really? Interesting. Well, I'm going to direct this question to you, Kathy. Were both of you wine lovers before you did this, or was this just something that captured your fancy? And
I think he was, and I know his father was. And I learned to go from the sweeter things to a nice dry red. No, actually, we have learned a lot in 34 years. There's no doubt about it. And we've taken trips to Italy and France and different places, and our expectations are a lot higher than they used to be, obviously. But 34 years is a long time.
It's a very long time.
Yeah, you can learn a lot in that amount of time.
Yeah, I was and both, I think all of us were, the Lemon family were influenced by not only Tabor Hill, which is in the neighborhood, but St. Julian. And those were two of the wineries primarily that we were supplying grapes to prior to us starting the winery.
We were the second winery in this area and the 15th winery in the state of Michigan.
Wow. Good for you guys, especially to be here that long. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Just curious, what is Lemon? What's the ethnic background?
Well, if you can believe what we've come up with, Switzerland, Baron Switzerland, Alsace, border of France.
Interesting.
And yes.
We don't know if there's any connection, but that is the area, Baron Switzerland, obviously, of Lac Lemon, it used to be.
The Lake Geneva. Is it Lake Geneva?
That's what it is
now. Yeah. It was once called Lac Lemon.
Yeah. Interesting. This idea of starting a winery, I mean, did you get education? Did you go to school? Was it something you knew enough about? How did you start making wine, becoming the winemaker?
Well, I'll go back to the influence of Tabor Hill and St. Julian and...
Thin Valley?
Yeah, I didn't...
To a lesser extent?
To a lesser extent, yes. And so having spent a lot of time primarily over at Tabor Hill, helping prior to starting the winery... learned a little bit about winemaking and the process there, and then just kind of dove into it with a little bit of guidance from, both Tabor Hill and St. Julian, directing me that first year, and didn't make any major mistakes then, and haven't made a whole lot of major mistakes since. But
And you read everything you could get your hands on.
It's a little bit the school of hard knocks, but yeah.
So the first couple of years might have been really interesting years, interesting in
they
quotes.
They were. It was a simpler time as far as varieties go. I mean, we were working with basically about four varieties initially. We now are working with 26.
Wow.
And our customer base was in the early 1980s, people from Chicago, if they had European heritage, people on the coast. But generally, there weren't that many people that actually drank wine back then. I know it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it was.
Things have changed.
Oh, yeah. Things have changed a lot. And, you know, people would come in and ask, they wouldn't even know what to ask for.
Yeah.
Molly Pitcher, Matus was something you impressed your girlfriend with, remember?
So, yes, I do.
Yes. So our customer base really didn't know a whole lot about wine either at the time.
And as I said earlier, you know, we haven't made, nor do we still make, a Concord or a Niagara style wine. And those were usually the first words out of their mouth, mm-hmm. or what they were expecting. Yeah. So it was a little bit of a sell to get them to accept the character of the French hybrid wines primarily then. And we would sweeten them to a point that, you know, they would go, oh, that's not bad. And, you know, minus that Labrusca character that they were kind of looking for. But it was a tough sell in the beginning. And
And why are you so far away from the interstate?
Yeah.
That is a good question, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I would get that question in the early days, too.
But it's lovely when you come here because you're driving through. And, of course, there's a fair amount of corn as well, but you're driving through a lot of vineyards.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's amazing because you're in Michigan.
Yeah.
Right. And, of course, those vineyards were there back then also in 84 because they were Concord and Niagara vineyards. And
Is anybody growing Concord here anymore?
Yeah.
Oh, they still are? I heard that there were still some contracts in some areas, like here in Ohio, that kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot of Concord Niagara acreage in southwest Michigan.
Considering how far you guys go back, I mean, just what you've seen here in the industry, let alone in the country, has also changed radically because there's a lot of wineries now in Michigan. And every state.
Every state has at least one. Alaska, Hawaii, yes.
North Dakota.
So, yes. Wine has gotten extremely popular. And early on, people would come in and they would ask for a Chablis. Do you have a Chablis? You know, that's kind of a vague term here in the United States. I think it was like, do you have anything like Bartles and James? And as they learned, you know, they also... You know, and then, I mean, Cabernets and Chardonnays weren't even, nobody knew what they were, really. So, I don't know.
White Zins.
White Zin, yes. Or Blush. Yeah, Zin Blush.
Do you guys do Zin here at all?
We do now.
Yeah. We have it planted.
Okay, so you never went through the White Zin period, I'm assuming then, as far as making that.
No,
kind of
no, no. In fact, we have been since day one, 100% estate bottle.
Oh, nice.
That's true.
For our natural still wines, table wines.
Yes.
And I saw you also had some sparkling wines out there.
We do. We those are not 100% estate. Mm-hmm.
But still, you're making them. Are you making them yourself here?
No. We're it's our fruit, for the most part, on the Blanc de Blanc, the Blanc de Noir we have coming. Our fruit, we do everything but the final process.
Well, the final process is so specific, and it's not something every winery can do.
Right, we don't have the equipment to do it, and we kind of have turned to the master, which I saw on your agenda for the weekend here, is Mobby, and he's making our sparkling wines for us.
And he's been around as long as we have.
Yeah, really?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, he was one of those wineries that...
Uh-huh.
Were there times when you were earlier in the business, and I'm not trying to get negative here or anything, where you're just kind of like, what were we thinking? You know, when you consider the investment, the capital, the property.
I did. Yeah? I did, but...
Because he's a winemaker. You're the practical side of things.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, who starts a winery?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? I mean, especially back then, but it all worked out great.
Well, you have a great tasting room here. You got two different sides to it. One that seems to me to be a bit more retail, but it has a bar as well as this side. And I think that thing is people love to come to places like this to hang out and talk, which is what wine's all about, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah, this is a room where you can sit and enjoy a glass of wine. And at other times, it is pretty wall-to-wall with bus groups, especially Saturdays or something.
Reservations.
That we work within here. Little separation and
not big space. Bus groups, just a lot of small wine tours that go around to different wineries. And
sure. Stuff. Can you give me a rough idea how many people you see in a year?
On a given Saturday in September or October, easily 500 people. Saturdays, September, October are just, they're crazy busy. I don't know if it's because people have, their kids are in school and so they have to come on the weekends. They can't come during the week anymore. Or if it's the smell of the grapes in the air, or the leaves, or their last trip to Michigan before they stay in Chicago for the winter, or whatever.
They're getting rid of their kids. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's just, it's been that way for quite a while now.
I think
quite a few years.
Fall and grapes and wine. You know,
yeah, it kind of goes together.
Now, I was talking about how you've seen change locally, but again, the national wine scene has changed so much. With so much change that's gone on here in the state of Michigan and around the country, are you selling your wines outside of Michigan or no?
We don't really distribute an awful lot.
No.
We've been approached by a lot of distributors, but we're a family business. We're the real thing. We actually do all the work ourselves. We grow it. We live here. And so do we want to become a factory of winemaking, or do we want to be exactly what we say we are?
Yes. And we do distribute some to Indiana and some within the state of Michigan.
And
probably
not Chicago.
Probably around 15% of our production goes through the distributor channels, the wholesale market. And with what she's saying, we would need to expand the facilities, and
you explained it to me once. You said the margin of profit when you sell wholesale is reduced quite a bit, and so you have to have more volume to make the same amount of money. And we are already established. We're already known. People come here, and now that there's a lot of other wineries, there are a lot of people come here. So, you know, do you? I don't know.
Yeah, but our facility is also limited as to what we can do.
Sure.
So, but it was our
to go
choice.
To that next step, of which would be probably more distribution for sure, would require a new facility, which I would love, but I don't think Kathy would love that so much. So what we're really, really kind of hoping for
I would
is
retire.
There is a next generation, which would be the seventh generation Lemons.
Right.
That's capable, very capable. They're doing other things right now. I think I want them to know that the door is open right now. So if you're watching this podcast, we're ready to take a step back and
go travel and do
slow down a little bit. But my brother Tim and his son is part of it, and our daughter. We would consider, signing on the bottom line along with them, for a new facility, which is desperately needed at this point. But
he's more passionate about it all than me.
He's adventurous about it.
Yeah, I can't imagine him not being involved in making the wine sure. right to the very end.
Well, there's a pride there, especially after all these years. I mean, you've worked a long time to create this education. You already said it yourself. You learn something new every year. That's the thing about wine. The more you know, the more you don't know, right?
Right.
Well, you're talking about these other generations. I'm a little curious, other wineries in different parts of the country, particularly the West Coast, have run into issues during harvest with labor. And I don't know, when it comes to harvest here, because you have a good-sized piece of property, do you have any issues with labor when it comes to harvesting, or are you doing mechanical harvesting? I mean, how does that go for you guys?
We primarily mechanical harvest, but labor, I'm happy to say this year was not the issue it was last year. So we were in pretty good shape. Yeah, and especially when we get to the other fruits we have, the apples and the peaches that are, just as are labor intensive throughout the summer, so sure. labor is spread pretty thin. So, yeah, and not that there weren't times this year when I certainly would have been great to go pick up, an extra 10 people to get through that leaf pulling or that shoot thinning or whatever it might be.
What was the problem last year? Was it just simply not enough bodies?
Yeah, there just weren't, and they weren't available. We didn't have them, I think if you go back even three, four years ago, it was even rougher, at least in our situation. And I think it varies from grower to grower.
Do you have any thoughts for the future? I mean, concerns? Obviously, you want to move on eventually, as you say, retire. But, I mean, for next year, is it something you sit back and think about?
Yeah, it is a concern. And the one thing that we do know that if you don't have housing, you won't have workers. And so that's probably something that we actually was part of the reason we are in the position we're in right now is because we happened to pick up some property that had another house on it and was able to a nice facility for a number of workers. And so we expanded into that. And I think that down the road, we're going to have to continue to provide and upgrade even the housing we currently have.
Here's a question I've been asking a lot this year, and so you can take time to think about it. Ooh, you have that look on your face. What's the question you don't get asked that you'd like to be asked? I mean, you're in the tasting room, you get to talk to people. I'm sure you occasionally spend time in the tasting room. I know that's really your
that's
focus.
That's what I do, yeah.
We kind of touched on it, but, we never get asked what we're going to do when we after we stop doing what we're doing, because I think we kind of hit at that, I do love what I'm doing, but... There is going to be an end to when I can at least step away, whether I, never get out of the cellar and quit cleaning tanks and whatever, but hoses. But I don't think most people look at it as we see a number of people our age or close to it that are wanting to get into the business because it's the romantic side of it, I'm sure, because, cleaning the lees out of a tank isn't all that much fun. I never get asked, what are you going to do next?
Interesting. Yeah, I guess maybe people think that, right, you're glued at the hip to doing this particular kind of thing. But there is something beyond wine.
Well, I'd like to ask that question right now.
We've got this on camera.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What are you thinking about doing? Because,
well,
I'd kind of like to know.
As soon as I get my replacement here, what will it be? Well, you already said you're traveling with or without me. So I
did.
I guess I'm going to start traveling a little with you.
Well, that'd be great. New Zealand, South Africa?
Wherever.
All right, let's go.
Italy.
Sorry, I'm just trying to keep from laughing. That was a great little segment. Thank you very much.
But next generation, what they do is what they do.
And, that's right.
We don't have any,
We got to choose what we wanted to do. they get to choose. Yeah.
If you're listening, you know, we are ready. I already said that, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Let's see.
I just love how you looked at the camera. Yeah.
But no, maybe we'll have to start adopting or something to increase our the prospects.
That might scare them doing that. Yeah.
Well, it's such a completely different business. I mean, the one thing I've talked about a lot with people is this idea that winemakers live in the past, the present, and the future simultaneously.
Hmm.
When you think about it, you're looking at your past. I mean, again, we've just talked about how many years. You're looking at what you've done in 2018, and I'm sure you're already looking to what's going to happen next year, getting ready when your pruning is going to happen, that sort of thing. And certainly this part of the country, pruning is a very different conversation because it's probably really cold when you prune.
So. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we put our time in out in the vineyards pruning.
When do you normally prune, January?
We will start fairly soon. Right now, obviously, we're doing the work we can do with, you know, with the trellis repair and... we've got some new vineyards going in. We're getting those posted and wires and trellis in.
There's the sexy part of the business right there.
Yeah, pounding posts. Yeah,
very romantic.
Yeah. So yeah, no, we'll wait till we leaves are all gone, and which is going to happen next week, it sounds like. But so yeah, it's not unusual that we're trimming by the end of November.
Oh, that's early. I'm surprised to hear that.
Yeah, it's we have some varieties that are fairly early that we could start trimming now if we wanted, but when it gets a little colder and put your hood up and get your back to the wind. And
and back in the day, Tim, Jeff, and myself, we were those people out there trimming. Yeah. I can still do it in my head.
Oh, I bet.
Do it so much.
It becomes automatic.
Yeah.
Well, kind of going a little different direction, what do you both like to drink? What do you drink? As winemaker and owner and tasting room manager.
We have different tastes.
Well, I don't know.
We do.
Yeah, a little
different
bit.
Grapes, different... Yeah. You like white more than I do.
Yep,
Dry red more than you do.
Yeah.
Different... he loves Pinot Noir. I could care less about Pinot Noir. Yeah, I can think of a lot of differences, which works out well because if it comes to... the dry rosé that he makes, he'll say, "Would you, what do you think? Do you like this one? Is this as good as last year? Blah blah blah." And I don't know if it means anything, but he does, because I'm the one that likes it the most. So, but he also does a lot of random. Okay, this is A, B, and C, and different blends, maybe a little bit more of this or a little bit less of this or whatever. And then everybody gets to, what do you like about it? What do you like about that? Anybody that walks in the door can be a part of this.
Wow.
If he happens to be doing it, anybody that works here. And he listens to everybody, and which I think works out really well.
That's pretty cool.
Well, I was told a number of years back that I couldn't make all the wines that the way I like them. So, ergo, we do make some sweeter wines, but I do like dry whites a lot, especially in the summertime. But probably not a good thing to say, but I drink a lot of dry white wine, but I probably enjoy more red wine.
You're a complex guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that you like both, because you make both, right?
It is. And I said, I probably drink more white. I was told one time that you had to drink three times as much white wine to get the same health benefits of red wine, but I don't know if that's true or not.
I was not aware of that.
Now I get it.
We all know how to take care of ourselves now.
Well, and then there's a thing called cellar blindness. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Sure.
Yeah. Where if Cabernet Franc tastes like this and you like this, and then, you can try to get it back. I have a lot of customers that come in and they have a very specific wine that they like from a very specific winery. And they'll say, "Would you have anything like this?" And I'll make different suggestions. "Nope, that's not the taste. Nope, that's not the taste." They're not even looking to see if it might be something that they might like, because they're looking for that very specific thing. Well, that's kind of what happens in the cellar, I guess, huh?
Yeah. And obviously we don't try to make California style wines because
sure.
we don't have that. But, we we do fit in pretty well with the French style wines.
Yes.
And character.
So the tasting room here, this is pretty much anybody can walk into this. It's not necessarily by appointment unless you're coming with a big party. Is that right?
Right. If they have seven or more people on the weekend, then I'll ask for a reservation. But it's not for me. It's for them, because there's no way they're going to get seven people at the bar unless I hold space for them. Sure. So, and we keep this room that place. And then the other room is for walk-ins. And yeah, it works out really well. We had to build this room. It was just necessary. In fact, on the weekends in the fall, I could use another one, quite frankly.
Do you have a website where our listeners could find you?
Yes, we have a website.
What is that?
Lemon Creek Winery.
Yeah, lemoncreekwinery.com.
Yeah.
I love when I caught people off guard.
Well, I was just waiting for her to say.
Kathy and Jeff, this has been great talking to both of you. I appreciate you welcoming us here, and I wish you continued success. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our one tagline that we have is that we are a pure Michigan winery from the ground up.
Which totally describes who we are.
Learn more by visiting lemoncreekwinery.com or michiganwinecollaborative.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.